Right now, it's time for Oh, the Humanities, looking at events, scholarship, and research on the humanities on campus. And we are joined now by Rachel Shavitz, Chapel Hill Town Council member and fellow with the Carolina Public Humanities. Humanities.unc.edu is the website. Rachel, how are you? Good to have you here.
I am great. How are you?
Doing all right. So what's coming up?
Oh, we got so much coming up. But I brought with me two guests today to talk about one big thing we've got coming up on campus, which is April 6th through 12th. Is Europe Week.
Awesome.
And with me, I've brought Katie Lindner, who runs Europe Week for the UNC Center for European Studies. And I brought Dr. Holger Moroff, who teaches political science and is himself German, a European, and here living in Chapel Hill and teaching at UNC. And they're going to help tell us about some of the awesome events we've got planned.
Awesome. So welcome, everyone. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So tell us about Europe Week. What's it going to entail, Katie?
Well, thanks for asking. It's going to be a great week. We call it the Europe Week Extravaganza. So it's, as Rachel said, starts this Saturday on the 6th, goes through the 12th, and there's an event every single day. And the goal is to look at Europe and the EU from various different perspectives. So we have film screenings, language lunch. We have the EU Prize for Literature-winning author David Mercado is coming to do a book reading at the library. And of course, we have a big talk on Brexit, because who's not talking about Brexit?
Right.
So
the people who should be talking about Brexit are the ones who are not talking about Brexit. But yeah.
Good point. Yes. So we do have Lisbeth Hooke, Gary Marks, our experts, talking about it, answering some questions, right? Trying to figure out what's going on.
And you know, it's different perspectives, but is there kind of an overarching theme this year?
Really, for us, it's about fostering the dialogue on the EU. And we every year our topics change because we want to talk about what's relevant and most relevant to our community members, but also what's happening in the EU and how can we continue to learn.
And it's such a complex organization, institution, and it's such a complicated topic with so many different facets, hence the many perspectives. And I know, as you mentioned, everyone is talking about Brexit, but what other things about the EU should people be focusing on right now?
Well, basically, the EU is the deepest form of globalization on a regional scale. Mm-hmm. In Western Europe. And I think people have to be aware of understanding what that means. It has one big single market for goods, services, people, and money. And administering this market means you have to come up with rules. And those rules, by necessity, are multilateral rules. Mm-hmm. That means each individual member state, each country, has to give up a little bit of their sovereignty, right? And this lies at the heart of Brexit as well. So why is it so difficult to extricate yourself from the EU? Brexit, I think, is a showcase of that. And it's for the very same reason that it is difficult to cut ties in an integrated global division of labor and trade, and cut ties of all the rules that have been set up for these mechanisms to work. So there is a moment of utopia and dystopia, right? Looking for the ideal in the unfamiliar, maybe, since the Brits voted to get out by 52% in a referendum, but now, of course, they can't agree on how and where to get to, right? Hmm. So they framed the EU as a kind of dystopia, but didn't know what their utopia is, and now everything is up for grabs. From a very practical perspective, and that affects, I think, working people in the United States most, is the fact that the EU and all its member countries have been the largest source for foreign direct investment in the United States for decades. That means they set up factories and shops, and the Research Triangle has many of those companies. BMW here at the border between South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia. So this is the kind of job creating and financial interaction that emanates from the European Union to the United States, and that might make it interesting for Americans to look at what it actually is, right? It seems to be a big enigma. It is complicated, but at the core of it, it's a big common market with rules. And if you want to leave, you could compare it to a state in the United States deciding we do not apply antitrust law in the U.S., or we cut off interstate commerce in the U.S., which is an integral part of the common market the U.S. is. You could also compare it to NAFTA, right, which got a pretty bad reputation, right, over the last two, 3 years as well, and was renegotiated, at least in name. It's very similar to the EU, except the EU would also mean that you can have your trucks driven across the border by the same truck drivers. Of course, there would be a Teamsters Union and others, right, who would be up in arms against this freedom of service and employment and self-employment. And it would also mean that people could look for jobs, right? Any Mexican could come over to the US and seek jobs. This is what the EU is, right? From Ireland to Portugal, from Poland to Italy, everybody can pack up and look for jobs or offer services or set up a shop anywhere else in the European Union. And to wrap your mind around that is, I think, a very important task if you want to know what you're talking about when you talk about the EU and maybe how it compares to the US. And of course, all EU member states are democracies, whereas the EU itself, of course, has some democratic deficits. And those are all things which are important to keep in mind. And this is why our Europe Week, I think, is a great starting point to start looking into this kind of, I think, modern society, right? This is, I think, what unites the US, Western Europe, and many other modern societies, is that they function in very complicated ways. And the individual sometimes gets lost in these complications and then roots for the simple answers and votes for people who pretend they have simple answers to all these freedoms. And among these freedoms are, of course, the freedoms of the individual. And I noticed two events next week will deal with identity questions, right? Whereas in traditional societies in the past or traditional societies today, your identity is ascribed to you by society. You are born into a male or female, or you are born into a certain religion, right? Modern societies give the individual the freedom to choose their identity, at least not to be forced into what society prescribes it, right? And this kind of freedom can be torturous for the individual and for the society at large. We just talked about this event on,
April 10th.
On April 10th, about the LGBTQ rights in Europe. And I was reminded that in 2014, it was a transgender man, woman from Austria who won the Eurovision contest.
Yeah.
And he was held up, or she was held up.
Conchita Wurst, right?
Conchita Wurst is her name.
She's great. Yeah.
And she was held up in Moscow and in other quarters of the world that might be more traditional or authoritarian as the symbol of where they don't want to go. You're all gonna end up as a very confused individual and society.
Which is a shame because the music was fantastic. Like, she was great. She was fierce. I loved her.
It epitomizes essentially the kind of modern societies with modern freedoms. And it also explains the backlash you can see against those kind of developments.
Speaking about Europe Week, which is going to be next week, or actually starting later this week, right, this weekend, April 6th, which is Saturday, and running until April 12th, which is next week, Friday. If you want more information on this, by the way, you can head online and visit europe.unc.edu. That'll take you to the Center for European Studies. If you want to go straight to Europe Week, europe.unc.edu/Europe Week. And I'll go back to the point that you mentioned right at the beginning of that about the difference between dystopia and utopia. And I think that's a really important point because for two reasons, right? One is that you've got people, as in the Brexit case, who know what they think dystopia is and don't know what their vision of a utopia is. They don't know what they want. And then there's also the case that one person's dystopia is another person's utopia and vice versa, CF Conchita Wurst, right? This is something that a lot of people are, this is something that a lot of people are aspiring towards, like the kind of society that has that level of freedom. And then you have a whole swath of the world that's pushing really strongly against that. And that clash comes into how we understand the European Union too, right?
I think for us too, it's it really is important to show the diversity, right? Because you know, to think about the EU and all of the different languages that are spoken, and when you go visit the European Parliament and you see all the translation booths and 24 official languages, and that alone is something so fascinating about how the European Union works. And that's, you know, goes back to why we do this EU Languages Lunch, thanks to the partnership with Carolina Public Humanities and Rachel, we'll have tables around the room with six different languages, and folks can come, and it doesn't matter what your language level is. We're all going to read a little article on populism, which is obviously, again, a topic that we can all relate to, in the target language, and then we come together and talk about it, and then we come back together as a group and talk about how it relates to all of us. So, you know, how we can bring, it's just, you know, it's very simple, but we bring all these different languages, six different ones, plus English, seven, into a room. We all eat lunch together, sharing a meal, talking about important topics that we can all relate to from various different perspectives. And, you know, we have first-year students and retirees that are, you know, anybody can come.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Awesome.
And that's just one little example of how we can bring this diversity to the table. And of course, LGBT rights. And we're going to show that through short films, which is a great way. Three different languages, three different member states, cultures represented. And again, these are issues that we all face, and we can bring them together through a visual, which again shows us all these, how we can relate to all these differences, because they don't have to be pointed out as differences, quite the contrary.
Speaking about Europe Week, we're speaking about the EU, and it's a difficult concept to wrap your mind around because it's a new thing. I mean, even though it's an institution that now has existed for a while, it's still something that's in the process of becoming. And the way that I've always kind of understood it, it's that it's just a slightly larger and more multilinguistic version of what happened in the United States in the first 100 years of U.S. history, right? You have all these independent states that come together to form one larger conglomerate, and you've got the question about identity. Am I North Carolinian or am I American? Am I British or am I European? You've got questions of state sovereignty. How much does the government of Massachusetts have to give up in order for there to be a stronger central government? How much does the government of Germany have to give up in order for there to be a stronger central government? How accurate is that comparison, and what are the differences?
That's to you, Holger.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wish I had a simple answer.
I know there are.
I
know there's an entire shelf of books that have been written about this.
Yeah, obviously, you have already mentioned the translation booths in the European institutions, right?
Right.
If you have more than 30. Languages, official languages, that's a very big difference to the United States, right? Mm-hmm. Which essentially went for one, at least, working language for everybody. So celebrating diversity, unity in diversity, that's squaring the circle. But you have the same slogan on your $1 note, right? Pluribus unum. So squaring the circle of unity in diversity goes for the US and for Europe. I think that's what certainly this conundrum paradox unites us. There differences. Of course, the EU is not a nation state. It is less than that. It is less powerful than that. It is less sovereign than that. It is more than an international organization. It's a confederation, maybe similar to the Articles of Confederation before you had your second constitutional congress and the present constitution was drafted. Also, you talked about dystopia, utopia. Of course, the beginning of the EU lay in the Cold War, the beginning of the East-West conflict. And whether you like it or not, a common enemy seems to unite countries, and the common enemy for many decades, right, until the 1989, was the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact, the communist ideology. And until 1989, the EU and the US had the same destiny, shared the same destiny. And once this common enemy is gone, the question is there enough on the inside that keeps us together? Mm-hmm. Have we developed enough intrinsic motivation and intrinsic value-based ideas and convictions? And that's the big question. And the EU has become politicized, I think, very much against its own logic and against its own wishes. It was very technical, as regulating a common market is, right? Very low profile, almost apolitical and obscure. But once it was launched into a more salient, right, sore thumb kind of position, I would say with the euro, then people could point at it and could, of course, blame it for all kinds of domestic trouble, right? Greece and other countries who had to suffer through severe financial crisis, sovereign debt crisis. They would point now to the EU like in former days, third world countries or other countries who were bailed out by the IMF would point to the IMF or to the World Bank and put all the blame at the doorstep of institutions that are not running in their domestic political system, right? And this is something the EU faces, not only from member countries, right? Brexiteers or other countries who used to want to leave the EU but now change their mind after they looking at what's going, what's happening in London, but also by people in the United States, right? The Europe seems now to be the new dystopia, the new other, right? The multilateralism that is eschewed by certain political movements in the rest of the world. So the EU now is in, takes center stage as an object of criticism and maybe dystopia.
Does Britain's leaving strengthen the rest of the EU? I never thought about that until you just said that. It's probably too early to say, but
I think it's much too early to say. Of course, the voices that would call for exiting the EU in France or Greece or Italy or other places have virtually been silent. Because they see the mess this will lead them into. Now they say they want to change it from within, right? And I think that's a much more constructive attitude. It's like Her Majesty's loyal opposition. You know, you're loyal to this. You might not like the policy of the day and of the current government, even though you do not have a government in the EU, but you are loyal to the system. And if this Brexit debacle can foster something like this, I think this would help the EU also being a forum for opposition within on the inside, which it is not today. And that's the main difference between all the democratic political systems that member states of the EU have.
Although having just seen The Favourite, I'm not sure I put a lot of stock in Her Majesty's loyal opposition, but that's neither here nor there.
Historically inaccurate.
All right, that's fair. All right. Europe.unc.edu/Europe Week for more on Europe Week at Carolina. We've been talking about some of the events, other events that we haven't been able to get to yet that people ought to know about. Katie?
Yes. So just also great. Where do I start? I also need to say thank you to the European Union delegation to the U.S. for generously funding all of these events. And they're a really important partner because they also want people to understand what the EU is about and what's in the headlines, but also just this history, peace and prosperity on the continent. That's really important. So one way we're showing more about the EU is at the Ackland Art Museum on Tuesday night. It's a happy hour. Please RSVP. You can come if you're under 21. If you're over 21, you can also partake in a different kind of beverage. And it's we have Susan Harbage Page coming. She's a faculty member in women's studies, and she's going to show a film that she made while she was researching in Italy about women's rights in the EU and textile development. Really cool.
Awesome.
And then, of course, there will be tours of the galleries and you know, sort of looking at contemporary Europe through this historical lens and through art. So that's a really exciting night. We talked about the short films and the LGBTQ identity issues, and that's actually an official Pride Week event, which we're super excited about. The book reading, thank you to the Chapel Hill Public Library for hosting us. Very exciting, love that place, those people. And then our closing reception, the last night, we kind of bring everything together, and that's a great event because our headliner are the Onyx Club Boys, and I hear they have quite a following in the area. Yes, and then we have some students from the music department who are gonna who have been doing a partnership with King's College London, and they'll be playing as well. And then we'll have our photo exhibit, and we have students who've written or anyone could write an essay about the EU, and the prize winners have been selected, and they will be showcased that evening too. So.
Awesome. Anything else that we need to know about Europe Week? We got to wrap up here.
Please come. Yeah, please come. And I think that everything is open. There are just only two events that we need RSVPs for because of space, and that's the languages lunch. We want to make sure we have enough spaces at the table and lunch, and then the happy hour at Ackland. So everything else is available at europe.unc.edu to just show up and come. Mm-hmm. And those are the two that we'd like to get some RSVPs in advance.
Awesome. Europe.unc.edu for the Center for European Studies for Europe Week, europe.unc.edu/Europe Week. And that again begins this Saturday, the 6th, runs through next Friday, the 12th, a whole bunch of different events. Look forward to all of them. Everyone, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much.